clear so that in the event that things start warming up in Iran as we talk, we are talking at 1:31 in the morning time Thursday. So if there's to be an attack this evening, Persian time, Iranian time, it will come within the next 3 hours. For Israel to telegraph its punches through British stooges like David Cameron or German stooge like Anna Baerbock, the two foreign ministers of the two small and declining European states, is an oddity. The reason, presumably, the Israelis are telegraphing punches, ghost punches, through ministers is because the United States and the consensus of the allies of Israel have been telling them not to do this. The reason for that is strategic, and it's very well understood, even if the Israelis don't want to admit it. The last blackout that Israel and the Jewish people ever faced 200 years ago, when they claim during the Maccabean revolt against the Seleucid Greeks, Antiochus in the war 166, a miracle occurred at the temple in Jerusalem in which a single vessel of oil managed to keep going for 8 days instead of the one which it was predicted to do. That was the last threatened blackout the Israelis or the Jews ever faced. This time around, however, were they or if they are about to attack any major Iranian infrastructure as distinct from a military target, that will change the rules of exchange or the notion of reciprocity and tit for tat. And we become strategic more than tactical exchanges of military, as we all remember, the Israeli attack that killed senior Iranian military officers in Damascus in a diplomatic print. If the Israelis attack Iranian infrastructure, what Iran has made clear will happen is that it will retaliate with a degree which has yet to be seen and with weapons that have not been used in combat with Israel to date. That implies hypersonic speed missiles against which the Americans have proved they don't have a defense, neither do the British, neither do any of the European air defenses deployed in the Ukraine. They cannot defend against hypersonic. And we know Iran has the capacity, but has not yet demonstrated on the battlefield. If the Iranians respond, be their targets, they will match their targets with whatever Israel aims to attack now. The Israeli vulnerability to attack on its electrical and power infrastructure has been demonstrated, and the piece quotes the Israelis identifying how vulnerable they are. 200 years, the Jewish kingdom in rebellion against the Seleucid Greek armies claimed they had a miracle from God to keep a very small supply of oil going to burn the lights of the temple. Well, this time round, if the Israelis, people like Netanyahu, who are messianic, we know that they have particular beliefs that God's coming for them, but not for the rest of us. If they believe the Messiah or God will come for them to keep the lights on, they're kidding themselves, and they will soon discover.
Well, John, do you think that the Iranians are going to be determined by Israel and by what Israel does, or that the Iranians have already made a provision for this eventuality that Israel would try some kind of face-saving assault, which they have clearly warned, big or small, they will respond to? But I would think that those targets would already be preparing anything.
You may be right. I'd be inclined to say, yes, you don't telegraph your punches at this level of military engagement. The Israelis telegraph punches in order to generate fear on the other side, on the side of their targets or adversaries, a fear, apprehension, trembling. As you said at the intro, this is the age of trepidity, of trembling, of fear and trembling. The strategic change, however, is the fear and trembling on the side of weak politicians like Cameron and Baerbock and others throughout Europe who face defeat elections in their countries. The fear and trembling now is on the Israeli and allied side, and those graphing your punches and telling what you're going to hit has never been an Israeli habit. Their objective is to show a sort of shock and awe force, and they will do what they will do. Now, do they heed publicity, PR statements from their allies not to go so far? They don't heed those. They can make strategic calculations as to what will happen beyond the next blow that they inflict. And if they are capable of counting, not the arrival of the Messiah to light the eight candles in the menorah, the Hanukkah celebration in Jerusalem, make us exceedingly vulnerable to a thorough, higher explosive yield Iranian attack, then they will curb the targeting of this purported. Of course, if they don't attack tonight, then the pressure is on them to demonstrate what exactly are they promising Cameron Bok to do. If it's tomorrow night, if it's not tomorrow night, what are they waiting for? Are they, in fact, the paper tiger, which Hamas has demonstrated since genocide of Palestinian people, and which Iran partly demonstrated a weekend ago over the evening of March 14?
Well, before Lord Cameron went on to issue his, I don't know what it was, like his green light for Israel's purported attack, there was reports of another offer going through back channels, a request from Israel to Iran that they allow face-saving all attacks, and apparently Iran told them where to take that offer or request. Did you hear anything on this?
I hear a lot of rubbish.
Yeah,
Chris, you and I both. That's in the rubbish bin.
Yeah, it sounds a little fantastical. Well, in your article, John, again, it's Loose Lips Don't Sink Ships or Israel. That's over at Dances with Bears, John's website. You made a point that I really find fascinating, that in all of warfare on several fronts, as far as Israel is concerned, against different actors in Lebanon and in Strip itself and even in the West Bank, nobody has yet targeted their power infrastructure, not their pipelines, not their coal and gas-fired electric plants or their solar and wind farms. None of it has been targeted and touched as far as I'm aware. Do you think those that hasn't happened? Has that been sacrosanct or is it?
The easy answer for me to say, Chris, is I don't know. I'll stick to that. I can.
Well, it's your article.
No, the article explains what Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, and Iran have all agreed not to do. They have not hit Israeli civilian infrastructure. For example, within range of the relatively low-yield rockets that Hamas has, they could have attacked oil storages in Ashkelon. They could have attacked bombs generating almost a half of Israel's gas consumption need for energy production. They have not done so. Hezbollah has much longer range missiles, which could have struck a whole range of targets of the kind you've mentioned, electricity generating plants, solar and wind farms, the offshore gas platforms and so forth, and the transmission lines, the electricity grid. They're exceedingly vulnerable. Admit it. But the Arabs and the Iranians have carefully by decision, decided not yet to do that. The Palestinians are facing genocide. There's been no restriction, no rules of the game in a military sense of the word, in any behavior. Why the Arab side armies retaliated with and taken the limits off? I don't know the answer to that. I have to say part of the answer must lie in Tehran. Tehran's been the principal supplier of the weapons which could take out these targets. It would probably have the guiding control, command and control, and the Israelis executed those in Damascus, that command and control. If Israel kills the men in Damascus who restrained Hamas, Hezbollah, and the others from attacking Israeli infrastructure, why isn't the response to take the wraps off those missiles and attack? And the mission points out and quotes the Israelis as saying they have not defended, established the anti-air, anti-missile defenses around the power system because they've installed it to protect their military bases first and their cities, their population centers second, and that little country, for all its American financial support and Jewish diaspora financial support, cannot afford those targets at the same time as it defends its military bases and its command control centers in places like Tel Aviv. It can't to do all those things, so it hasn't. So it's this gaping hole, this invitation to attack. It's the soft underbelly of the Jewish state. And therefore, if Israel admits this vulnerability, and that's not camouflage, if it admits the vulnerability and lasts Iranians' capacity to hit through that vulnerability, why hasn't it happened?
Yeah. Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with John Helmer. John's a journalist and author. He's living in and reporting from Russia. He's the principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears. We're talking today around his recent article there, Loose Lips Don't Sink or Israel. Now, John, about the electric war, maybe some of our listeners who are tuning in for the first time don't know what it is. You and your article mentioned that is the Israel to Ukraine to study the effects of the electric war that Russia has been waging there. It's just ticked up, and we've talked about that before, that this phase or a bigger phase of the electric war has just begun again in that battle. Do you want to explain more fully, John, what those Israeli military officers might have learned in Ukraine?
Well, just to clarify, the electric war is simply the term that I've been using in the coverage of the Ukraine battlefield to explain the way in which the Russian military have been targeting an infrastructure that deprives the populace of the Ukraine without killing them of the means to go on resisting, and it, particularly east of the Dnieper River. So that's the Russian Dnipropetrovsk, Nikolaev, Odessa, the cities that have yet to surrender and give up the which the Kiev regime says they fight. Electric war reflects the targeting of every element of the generation of electricity. Now, armies can't fight. People have to leave and flee for to conduct their lives. A country which can't preserve its electricity system ceases to be a state. Now, applying that to the situation in Israel, the place to learn is not to go to Kiev. Where the Israelis go to learn about electric war, they've gone to the wrong place. In fact, they'd be lucky if they get to Kiev or some of the other cities of the Ukraine to have the lights on what's happening. Because the Ukrainians are basically lying about their capacity to withstand and lying about their capacity to import plants and electricity from Europe to withstand the electric war that Russia has moved on to escalating now. And that's what the earlier articles are about to explain in the Ukraine context. What can the Israelis learn from the Ukraine? Nothing except defeat.
Well, they can learn that in spades. Well, this idea that that the electrical grid is a civilian infrastructure kind of falls apart. We've seen that the Americans in Belgrade and way back Baghdad and in other places, it's a common tactic of theirs is to knock out the electrical grid on day one.
That's right. I mean, electric as a military way of waging war as a weapon was not invented by the Russians. It was by, as you say, in the NATO bombing campaigns against Yugoslavia, against Serbia in 1999, and it had a very considerable effect, extremely damaging effect there. But the Allies, the British, used the same tactic against Germany and the famous Dam Busters raid, celebrated if you're an reading about the World War II exits of the Royal Air Force, reflects the kind of targeting of civilian targets in Germany, which generated either power or water irrigation for farming, and so on and so on and so on. It's not a new tactic. Knocking the lights out is not a new tactic for waging war. What is new is that the Russians are destroying the capacity of the Ukraine to continue the war without killing people. What isn't new about what the Israelis are doing is that they are killing people genocidally in Gaza and with the intention of doing something like the same thing to the West Bank Palestinians. What's new about the Israeli combination is they're highly vulnerable and they're committing genocide at the same time. What the Israeli war machine is good at is killing defenseless people. What the Russians are demonstrating is electric war. Is without killing, you can end the war by compelling surrender. It's a new form of siege tactic, if you like.
Well, the Israelis are acumen at killing civilians every day, and today included children being the foremost of their targets. The Iranians, when they made their statement about their rocket attacks against Israel, they mentioned the Ramon base, which is the main base used to target the Gaza Strip, with not even halting more than the evening of the actual Iranian response, their attacks against Gaza, and just for Iran to step up their attacks in regards to their professed desire to protect the civilians in Gaza.
That's a motive that's spoken of in public, yes. I can't put my own into Iranian and interpret what they say, discount what is said in public in relation to what goes on in secret and in private, and discount war aims are capacities to succeed and cost of waging war. So what I think we'll see is if, and it's a big if, and it's now another 20 minutes into the late night in Tehran, if the Israelis attack, which they haven't done until now, and if they attack Iranian infrastructure, civilian infrastructure, power-generating infrastructure, then the Iranians will match that and multiply it so that the targeting that Iran engages in is calibrated to the level proportionately Israelis do. Now, you make a good point. How can you counter proportionately the side these are inflicting on the Arabs of Gaza? How can you? There's nothing proportionate in response to genocide. These have simply the international court's judgment, pending judgment on genocide, ignored the restrictions requested, world opinion about the utter criminality of genocide as a war aim. They continue to pursue that as a war aim. What's the proportional the position, as I understand it, is the Palestinians must defend for themselves with their allies. And the Houthis are doing what they to prevent Israel being resupplied and re-equipped from the south. The Houthis are not capable of hitting Ben Gurion Airport, three airports of Israel, into which all the US and NATO weapons supplies come. That is within range of both Hezbollah and Iran. And we'll just have to see what happens next. The reason that people more intelligent than Cameron and Baerbock urge the Israelis to restrict themselves is that at some point the escalation of responses, Israel on Iran versus Israel, at some point the escalation goes out of control. When a military escalation goes out of control, suddenly find itself much more vulnerable and defenseless than it has ever comprehended before. Since everybody able to understand, on paper, understand that, that's what the last piece about electric war against Israel means. Once that's understood, the question then is, when will the Israelis pull their nuclear? If they pull their nuclear trigger, and this is something we have to consider very seriously. How soon will they pull it? Will the Israelis go nuclear? If the Israelis go nuclear, then it's a war to end Israel, since they will be making war to end Iran, which is an unrestricted regional war becoming world war. This is what any reasonable political analyst understands is the dynamic here. Why? Because a country like Israel, committed to genocide against, like the Arab Palestinians, regardless of all restrictions in law and in morality, because they think they can get away with it, is a country capable of inflicting nuclear attacks on its adversary, when that adversary demonstrates the capacity to drive the Israelis to the wall and through it.
Yeah, well, there's some the talk I see now is that the world war is already under just a matter of degree. It's a matter of time until it ramps up into something that is more easily discernible as that to everybody. But right now, it seems everything seems to be pointing to escalation on all fronts. I'm not sure, John, we've only got a minute or so to go. I might have got that wrong when I said the Israelis went to Ukraine. I was reading your article. I think I might have misread that they should look at to the electric war in Ukraine, but they're not learning from it, rather than they sent people there to learn from it. Is that right?
There's lots of support for the Ukrainian war machine to fight Russia. And Russian official statements make this very clear. Not only the Israelis making statements in support of Ukrainian attacks on Russian civilians, they supply arms, technology, surveillance, electronics, all sorts of things to aid the Ukraine to fight Russia. Russia knows this very well.
Well, now, lastly, John, I see Yulia Navalny is on the cover of Time magazine, an article penned no less by the Vice President of the United States, Kamala Harris, as she's being listed. One of Time's most influential people in the world. Have you seen
Time is not an influential medium that I've got time to look at. Ms. Navalnaya
it's a nice picture.
Is irrelevance now. And if an irrelevant newspaper publishes a picture of somebody it considers to be highly relevant to it, I strongly suggest people look somewhere else for their cover news.
John, the time always goes too quickly, and we're all sort of waiting here, as I said at the beginning, on tenterhooks to see which shoe dropped and from where. I'm hoping we do get a chance to talk again, or if not, then it's been nice to share a planet with you while we've been here.
I shouldn't be laughing. It's very serious, danger of escalation, and all we can do is to see what happens next. And hope we can accumulate our voices and the benefit of the wise old man of radio, Guerrilla Radio, in Canada, to make sense of it for
well, those of you that don't know, go to John's website, Dances with Bears, johnhelmer.net, to find out more. There's much more there. Thanks to Stuart Parker for coming. That's all I have time for this week. Until the next time, thanks again, John.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
Moscow, Tokyo, New York. Guerrilla Radio online at guerrilla-radio.com. Everywhere, all the time.
Chicago. Jakarta. Helsinki. speak up, up. Speak, speak up, up. Up. Speak, speak up, up. Speak up, speak up.
Speak up,
speak up. Speak, speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good, and welcome to Speak Up for Monday, April 22nd, Earth Day today.
Oh, today is Earth Day.
Yeah.
Oh, they always arrange it to be on a Saturday for the, that was my assumption, but I'm wrong.
Well, I mean, April 22nd is sort of the traditional Earth Day, I'm sure, you know, all the weekend when people can get out to participate.
Yeah, I thought they had it was like the American Thanksgiving or like Easter.
My name is Magnus Tiever, one of your hosts for today. Joining me in the studio today is Peter.
Peter R.H., I'll go by that today.
And Stephen Fan.
Stephen Fan. And Stephen's going to come to in just a few moments. Peter's going to be talking about...
Well, the truthers. These are the people that thought that, that George W. was behind 9/11. And I, because I've said a few things over the past months, I want to separate myself from. You might think I'm one of them. No,
okay.
I'm gonna bring up that the history. There was a Bill Cooper. He's the one that started it, and he's really the one that who did predict Alex Jones. And I'm gonna a bit of the background about.
All right. Well, we'll get to that a little later in the show. We also have Music West Vancouver's. Annual independent and countercultural music festival is coming up next month, and we have a bit of a documentary about that at the end of the show, along with some of our usual features and some great music. We're going to start the show off, though, with Stephen Fan. You've been getting out and about. Absolutely. Some fun stuff.
Absolutely. So I